Hi everyone, it's Tim. Before we get started, I want to let you know, this episode contains scenes and descriptions of domestic violence. In November 2012, just a few months after the London Olympics, South Africa held its annual Sports Awards ceremony. It's a red carpet event, a whole ordeal, and one of the main attractions was Oscar Pistorius, who is now an international celebrity.
As I was standing there, and I think I was on my phone or something, I see it was a very nice car. I remember it was fancy.
That's Gabby Mbele. She's an entertainment reporter who was covering the red carpet that night.
I remember seeing Oscar get out the car. And then straight after that, Riva comes out the other side of the car.
Pistorius had arrived with Riva Steenkamp, a South African model.
And then I nudged the photographer and I'm like, dude, Riva and Oscar just came out the same car. You need to make sure that we get them in a picture together because there's a story there. And I start screaming, Oscar, 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 you know, like, Riva, Riva, Riva.
They posed for some pictures. He whispered something in her ear. She smiled. They looked like they were enjoying each other's company. Then another reporter called Riva over for an interview.
Hi, I'm Oscar's date tonight. He needed a date at the last minute. So it's like, Riva, just throw your stuff together and come and be my date. So I don't know how that worked out.
Another model had introduced them, and Pistorius had invited Riva to the event last minute, but she thought they were going as friends. Soon after, she called Charlene Ruthven, a friend from work.
And she phoned me saying, Shaw, please, you must look. I'm splashed all over the front cover of the newspaper because I went out with Oscar Pistorius to a sports event. And that's when I took my laptop and opened it up and said, well, you look lovely. And she said, and everyone's making such a big thing about it. The newspaper just went wild.
At the time, some people thought Pistorius was still dating Samantha Taylor. Samantha did too. She only realized the relationship was over when she saw him with Riva on TV. That moment on the red carpet, that was the first time the media linked Oscar Pistorius and Riva Steenkamp as a couple. Then, just 3 months later, in the early hours of Valentine's Day, 2013, Pistorius would shoot Riva dead in his home. In the aftermath, this is how the media often reported the news.
Famed Olympian charged with murdering his glamorous model girlfriend in the wee hours of this Valentine's Day morning.
They referred to Riva as Oscar Pistorius's glamorous model girlfriend, as if she were defined by what she was in relation to him. In the years since, this trend has continued more or less. We tend to focus on Pistorius and overlook Riva. But Riva Steenkamp was her own person, a smart, confident woman. She had a successful career as a model who was on the verge of a great second act. She was a mentor, an activist, and had plans to become a lawyer. In this episode, we'll explore who Riva Steenkamp was before she was ever linked to Oscar Pistorius. This is False Idol from Religion of Sports and PRX. I'm Tim Rowan. From CBC Podcasts comes an all-new investigative show hosted by award-winning investigative journalist Maggie Rahr. Carrie Lowe trusted police when she reported her horrific assault, but she says they failed to investigate properly and only succeeded in traumatizing her further. Now, she's setting out on a mission to hold these institutions to account. Listen to Carrie Lowe Versus everywhere you get your podcasts.
I remember when Riva was born, it was a lot of excitement.
That's Kim Martin, Riva's cousin. She was about 11 years old at the time.
We had a little family gathering at the house now, all to meet Riva. And I remember very clearly my aunt, Auntie June, said to me, Kim, would you like to hold her? And I was petrified, but I was so proud of being asked. And I took her in my arms and it felt like I was holding this precious, real-life doll.
The cousins spent a lot of time together, especially when Riva was young. Riva grew up in the countryside and living on farms, first in Cape Town and then in Port Elizabeth, a town on the green and lush eastern coast of South Africa.
you would always find Reva running around outside with the dogs in the mud. She was on horseback already at the age of 4, with her little jodhpurs and riding boots. She was a strong, confident country girl.
Reva's father, Barry, was a horse trainer. And in Port Elizabeth, they actually lived near the racetrack, in a building that housed jockeys. The Steenkamps were working-class people. They didn't have much money.
Barry would need to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning, going down to the stables, getting the horses ready. And Reva was always obviously involved in this. She would get up with her father early in the morning, go down to the stables, ride, help with the horses.
Reva also helped her mother, June, who ran a corner store. It mostly catered to people who worked at or lived near the racetrack, people from a range of backgrounds. In working the store, Reva and June would hear tragic stories from their hardscrabble community. Stories about girls who'd been abused, raped, or the victims of human trafficking. Reva was friends with one of these girls, and these stories made a deep impression on her. In the Steenkamp family, it was just the three of them, Barry, June, and Reva. Barry and June had both been married previously, and Reva was their only child together. Naturally, they were very protective of her.
We never heard of boyfriends at all when she was a teenager growing up. Barry, in particular, was determined that Reva was not going to date anybody. And obviously, Reva, being really beautiful, always had many admirers.
Reva actually started modeling when she was about 14, 15 years old. She appeared in a competition run by the local newspaper and posed for a wedding fair photo shoot. But Reva also took her schooling seriously. When she went to university, she chose to study law.
It was a very big thing. I remember my grandfather, he was so proud of her. My parents hadn't studied, my sister and I hadn't studied. So this was really something, you know, it wasn't the ordinary in our family. And to be studying to be a lawyer on top of it was a really big thing.
University was expensive, but Reva took care of it. She made sure to study hard, get good grades, so she'd get a scholarship. And she got a job to pay for the rest. She didn't want her parents to have to worry about money. Reva was just empathetic like that.
She was like a mother lion. She was protective and fierce and caring and kind.
When a friend got into a fender bender, Reva insisted on sitting with her at the hospital. One year, Reva threw a Valentine's Day party to cheer up another friend whose husband was away traveling for the holiday. At one point, Barry and June actually separated, and it was Reva who convinced them to get back together.
She would take on people's issues. If a friend was in trouble, you would see that that actually really affected Reva, and she couldn't ignore anybody that was in some way feeling pain or hurt.
Studying law at university, Reva acquired the tools she needed to help people, to speak out, to act on this empathy she felt for others. She learned about all types of law, criminal, human rights, labor. And when it came time to write her thesis, she chose to focus on South African marriage law. She seemed to be interested in interpersonal relationships, how we interact with one another. During her time in school, Reva had actually been in an abusive relationship.
It was definitely an emotionally and mental abusive relationship, and Reva felt that she had really let herself down by being in that situation. She confided in me, and it was a really very, very difficult time for her. It was difficult even more so to admit what had happened to her and what she had endured and what it had taken for her to build herself up. It took incredible amounts of personal growth to get through that.
This felt like a pivotal time in Reva's life. She was finding her moral compass, figuring out the person she wanted to be. In her last year of university, she got in a bad accident. One day she fell off a horse and broke her back. She suffered 2 crushed vertebrae, and doctors told her there was a chance she might not walk again.
She was in hospital for many months. and had to learn to walk again. And she said during that experience, she was lying there in hospital thinking, you know, she has only one life, and she decided she's just going to live her life to the fullest.
Around this time, Reva had started to make real waves as a model. And now, the accident helped put things in perspective. She decided she wanted a model while she was still young and healthy. She figured she'd return to law by the time she turned 30.
And I think there was always this little bit of interest. You know, Reva was a Leo after all. And they love to perform.
Reva's life was now coming into focus. She graduated at the top of her class, broke up with the abusive boyfriend, and won a big modeling competition with Avon, the cosmetics company. That meant a contract with Avon and frequent trips to Johannesburg, the modeling capital of South Africa. Sometime around 2006, when Reva was in her early 20s, she decided to move there, to the big city, to make it as a model. As Reva tried breaking into the modeling world, she contacted Ice Model Management Johannesburg, a boutique agency, hoping they'd represent her. But they turned her down. They said she was too short. Reva was only about 5'6", but she convinced them to at least see her.
So Reva came in, hair up in a ponytail, beautiful, straight, blonde hair.
That's Charlene Ruthven. She met Reva while working as a talent booker for Ice.
She had a great sense of humor. Very, very witty. She has this personality that will blow you away.
Reva's cousin Kim knew exactly what Charlene meant.
She wouldn't speak. You know, she'd walk in and she'd say, hello. She would sing. And I think that was just, it was so warm. People warmed to her. They were first knocked out by her beauty and then completely taken in by the warmth.
The head of Ice, Jane Saliers, later told a reporter, it was love at first sight. She signed Reva as a model right then and there.
Usually we don't do that. We say to them, go and take a walk around and we'll give you a call in 10 minutes or so. And Jane just couldn't resist and signed up.
Soon, Reva was stopping by the office all the time. She'd sit and chat, have some tea. Among her coworkers, she became famous for bringing in big goods. Sometimes when someone went on vacation, Reva came in the office and answered emails. Just to help out. None of the other models were doing that.
When she was on set, she would go and ask people, I'm going to make some tea, I'm going to make some coffee, can I get you something? And I think that just, people were stunned. There's this stigma about models are high maintenance and divas. So she got a reputation for just being fabulous and kind, and she was a good model. And she ended up getting more jobs just because of who she was and being the full package. She was a pleasure to be with. She was good to work with. She had the looks and she was going to go places.
Reva booked jobs for magazines, print advertising, commercials. She sold Toyota cars, KFC chicken, Cardinal beer. After she did a lollipop ad, people around the office started calling her Pin Pop after the company's name. That was the atmosphere around the agency. They were all rooting for Reva. In December 2011, she appeared on the cover of FHM South Africa, a men's magazine, sort of similar to Maxim. And everyone in the office went out to buy copies. Reva was older than the typical model just starting out, and she came to nurture some of the other girls. She'd take them on walks, give them nutritional tips, and shell out industry advice. Reva also mentored her cousin Kim's two daughters.
Reva would spend hours with them, you know, lying outside, telling them about life and about boys and gently educating them and you know, guiding them. They absolutely, absolutely idolized her, loved her.
Then, in 2012, Reva got her big break. She was cast on a new season of the reality show, Tropica Island.
Welcome to Tropica Island of Treasure 5. Each week, our players will compete in an island game designed to look much easier than it actually is.
It was sort of like Survivor, but with celebrities and less intense.
My name is Reva and I'm a model and we're in Jamaica this year. Be jealous, you can be jealous. Yes, you can win R1 million, that's always good. I'm not going anywhere.
During filming, Reva endeared herself to her castmates, who started calling her Mama Bear. And just being cast on that show elevated her status, even before the show aired. Here's Charlene Ruthven.
So once you become a type of a reality star, then you get more endorsements. You get a publicist. You get paid to arrive at events. You get paid to wear certain products. She would be more of a celebrity as opposed to a model. So I feel her modeling work was pretty much kind of done by then. She was now going into a different, higher level.
Now, Reva had access to different social circles. One day, she went to an event at a racetrack with a model friend, and that's where she met Oscar Pistorius. Shortly after that, Pistorius asked her out. Soon, they began dating. On social media, Reva depicted their relationship in glowing, positive terms. They attended events together, where they were photographed looking happy. To the outside world, it looked like they were in love. But Reva's friends and family saw hints of trouble here and there. In the beginning, for instance, Pistorius pursued Reva pretty aggressively. He wanted to see her all the time, and he'd get impatient if she didn't text back right away. When Reva booked a job that would involve kissing a man, she was nervous to tell Pistorius. She apparently worried about how he'd react. Reva's publicist even called her mom at one point. She said, "I'm very worried. He's so possessive." June tried asking Reva about it, but she demurred. After that, June sensed that Reva wouldn't tell her things about Pistorius that she might find troubling. In early January 2013, Pistorius and Reva had breakfast with Kim Martin, Reva's cousin, and Kim was eager to hear how Reva's new relationship was going.
I think he got a telephone call, and so he got up, excused himself from the table, and he went off to take the call. And while he was away, I turned to Reva and I said, "Okay, cuz, so I can see you. Are you really happy?" And I remember she shrugged her shoulders and she hesitated at first to answer me. And a kind of a, "Yes, but we will speak later." If everything was completely perfect, she would have just said yes. And I would have seen it immediately that she was head over heels. But I could see that there was just something, and I don't know what it was.
All Reva said was, "We'll talk later." Soon, Pistorius was back at the table, and they carried on with their conversation before going their separate ways.
And yeah, I was going to ask Kim, you never had that conversation, right?
No, we didn't. Unfortunately, we didn't. There was a lot of things going on in her private life, in her relationship part of her life that I didn't know about.
Around this same time, Reva also had a conversation with her coworker, Charlene. She told Charlene that she and Pistorius had been fighting quite a bit.
And she was starting to worry because she said to me at one evening, they went to an event and they had such a bad fight. And what should she do? And she was actually scared at one stage. She said, "I don't know. You know, what do I do? What do I say to someone like that? And do people erupt like this? Do they fight like this in the beginning of a relationship?"
In January 2013, Gabby Mbele was working on a piece about Pistorius. Remember, she was the entertainment journalist who covered the red carpet scene at the top of this episode. And as she was working on this story, her coworker received a tip. He heard Pistorius had been involved in a fist fight. Now, Gabby needed to call Pistorius to check it out.
And I recall him saying, "Gabby, please don't write this. This could ruin me. It could ruin my reputation." He literally said, "I promise you this didn't happen, Gabby. Like, I can't even get Reva to call you. You can call Reva just now. Like, you can call Reva. I promise you, ask her. She knows there was no such thing that happened. We were together." And literally within that 20 minutes, Reva called me and started telling me, "No, listen, no such thing happened. Honestly, like, he's such a good person." Like, she vouched for this guy. And I was like, okay, fine, dude. Like, if you saying nothing like that happened, there was no fight, you were there, cool. I literally accepted everything that Reva said, and we hung up, not knowing that would have been the last I heard from her.
It later came out that there had been a fight, and Pistorius had lied to cover it up. He now claimed that he'd been assaulted. Maybe you're wondering, why did Reva vouch for Pistorius? I had the same question, and I wish I could just ask Reva myself. There could be a million reasons why she made that call. Maybe Pistorius pressured her. Maybe he asked for her help to avoid the negative press. Maybe she didn't want negative press herself. Reva's career was taking off. The reality show was set to launch that February, and leading up to it, there was a big push to get her name out there, to get her as many photo ops, magazine stories, and TV appearances as possible, to make her a household name.
And she realized now that she had a bit of a platform, a larger platform than she had had before.
Reva had recently been a celebrity face for an anti-bullying campaign aimed at helping the LGBTQ community. Then, in early February 2013, a 17-year-old girl was raped and murdered in the Western Cape. Her name was Aneen Boysen, and her story made headlines around South Africa.
Remembering Aneen Boysen, the 17-year-old's horrific death has been described as an incident that has cast a dark cloud over the entire nation.
Soon after, Reva wrote this on Instagram. I woke up in a happy, safe home this morning. Not everyone did. Speak out against the rape of individuals in South Africa. Rest in peace, Aneen Boysen. Reva was using her platform to speak out about issues she cared about, speak out against gender-based violence. But just days later, she'd die at the hands of Oscar Pistorius. More after the break. Stay with us. On Valentine's Day 2013, Kim Martin and her husband were driving to work.
We were stuck in rush hour traffic. It was like a four-lane highway, and we were stuck right in the middle of it. And my husband always used to get irritated with me, but I put the seat right back and I put my feet up on the dash. And we were listening to the radio, and the DJ came onto the radio and said, we've got unconfirmed news that has just come in. And he repeated that about three times. And I was still lying back and I said, ach, come on, man, please, just, what is it? Get out with it. What do you want to report? And the next minute he said, Oscar Pistorius has shot his girlfriend. And I remember jumping up and I was like, what? I thought, that's not Reva. He's cheating on Reva with somebody else. Reva's not there with him. It can't be Reva. Not Reva. Anybody else. And in that few seconds, everything just went absolutely crazy. And I remember starting to scream, started screaming, and my husband tried to turn this car around in all this traffic, screeching down the roads, screaming, and my husband telling me, I have to calm down. I've got to keep quiet. I've got to calm down.
They headed straight for Kim's mother's house.
And when we got there, she was waiting at the door with the door open, and she just fell to the floor. And then I still remember saying to my mother, there is no way, it's not Reva. And then she said, it is. She said, I'm sorry, but it is. So then I still said, well, she's not dead. And she said, I'm sorry, but she is. Then thinking, oh my God, what about June and Barry? You know, how are they going to handle this?
About 2 days later, Kim went to Port Elizabeth to see Reva's parents.
The atmosphere in Port Elizabeth was very, very somber. They had a lot of friends that had rallied around and came to support. So by the time we got there, the house was full of people, and it was like that for a long time. And it was very difficult for them to carry on life as normal. Basically, life and work and everything stopped. They weren't really present. They weren't there. And Barry's health was very poor at the time. I mean, he had a few health scares before. And when this happened, there was another thing that as his family were worried about, is that was his health going to handle this?
In fact, Barry would suffer health issues. At one point, he had a stroke. Meanwhile, Pistorius had been charged with murder. He claimed that he thought there was an intruder in his house, and that's why he'd fired 4 shots into a closed bathroom door, only to later realize he'd shot Riva. The week of Pistorius' bail hearing, the Steenkamps had a chance to say goodbye to Riva in a private setting. She lay in an open casket, her head wrapped in a white silk scarf to hide her injuries. June kissed her goodbye and whispered, "I love you so much, darling, and I'm going to miss you. We will meet again." Then came the funeral service, where several people got up and spoke. One of Kim's daughters talked about how Riva had mentored her, had set her on the right path.
And my daughters took it very, very hard, as you can imagine. They were at such a pivotal age, and them having had such a close relationship with Riva, it had a really bad effect on them. We got counseling in for both of them, and for many years, and even till today, it's very difficult for them to talk about it.
Kim had helped plan the funeral. I wondered what that day was like for her.
It was a very, very heavy day for me. I just wanted it to be over. The service was as beautiful as any service can be. But, you know, I think when somebody dies and in the way that Riva died and with the amount of media coverage that it attracted, it was difficult to have a service where you could just concentrate on all the good and beauty about Riva.
Riva's death had a profound impact on the family, but so did the aftermath. The media covered the story around the clock. TV trucks camped outside the Steenkamps' home. Everywhere they went, there was a reminder. Riva was gone.
Paralympian Oscar Pistorius has been arrested for allegedly killing his girlfriend.
She was shot by Pistorius 4 times through a locked bathroom door.
29-year-old Steenkamp was shot dead by Pistorius, known as the Blade Runner.
It was like the rest of the world is just talking about this. And it seemed like it played over and over on every single news platform for days, months, years after that. You know, every time you turned on the news, there was going to be some kind of headline.
Oscar Pistorius wasn't just someone who was celebrated for his feats on the track. He is someone who is celebrated as a humanitarian.
You go into a shopping center and you see it on the screen. You walk past a shop and you see the news headline on the magazine. You see it on the newspapers. You walk into the hospital and the radio station is playing something and you hear Oscar Pistorius, Riva Steenkamp.
Oscar Pistorius and Riva Steenkamp were one of the world's hot couples.
It literally became our lives for a good couple of years.
In these stories, the media seemed to focus mostly on Pistorius and treated Riva as a side note. That dynamic played out in the years after, too. Remember, there have been several books written and documentaries made about this story. Often, Pistorius' family members are featured prominently, speaking on his behalf. The story is often told, then, from Pistorius' point of view. The Steenkamps got interview requests, too.
We were bombarded left, right, and center from every single corner. Everybody wanted a little piece of your story.
But it's a lot harder to talk when you're on the other side, when it's you who's lost a loved one. June Steenkamp did write a book about her daughter. It's called Riva, A Mother's Story. When I started working on this podcast, Riva's friends and family didn't want to talk. I reached out to several of them, and they either didn't respond or declined to be interviewed. I was told multiple times that they were tired of talking to the media. I also got the sense that they felt burned by how the story had been told previously. Kim Martin declined to talk at first, too. Then we sent her an outline, showing how our project would be different from the others, how we wanted to tell Riva's story in full.
And I particularly felt like people had to know who Riva was, what she was about, that there was this beautiful person on the other side of the story. And I do believe that if there's attention brought to what fame brings and how it affects certain people and how does abuse occur, that we can learn from things like this, all of us.
And Kim thinks that if Riva were still alive, this is what she would be doing, putting her law degree to good use. Working as an activist, speaking up for women's rights.
She would love to have gone back into law. She she was planning on that would be something that she'd go back to in the future, and that she would specialize in something that she had learned along the way. She was starting to obviously want to work with women and children towards the end.
After Aneen Boysen's tragic death, Reva was scheduled to give a speech to a group of high school students, girls who were about the same age as Kim's daughters. And Reva was supposed to give the speech on Valentine's Day, 2013. Charlene Ruthven sent me Reva's notes for the talk. It appears that Reva wasn't going to be reading from the paper verbatim, but she'd written down a list of things she wanted to touch on that day. She titled the presentation, Placing Value on You.
The speech was about girls empowering themselves, sort of working on themselves, having self-worth, and to watch out for the signs of getting into relationships that they could find themselves in, all abusive relationships.
Being loved by others, although an amazing feeling to have the appreciation of others, does not define your place in the world.
That's an actor reading some of Reva's notes for the speech.
Be brave. Always see the positive. Make your voice heard, your physical seen, and the presence of your mental you felt. It's that culmination of your person that will leave a legacy and uplift.
If Reva were still alive, she'd still be giving these kinds of talks. That's what makes this all the more heart-wrenching.
Yeah, that was something that she really was very interested in. And that she'd, you know, the irony that this was what she was going to do.
The Steenkamps didn't know much about her relationship with Oscar Pistorius. Reva and Pistorius were only seeing each other for 3 months. 3 months! Then, Reva was gone. Kim Martin still thinks back to that breakfast she had with Reva and Pistorius in early January 2013, about 6 weeks before he killed her. When Kim had asked how the relationship was going, Reva had said, "We'll talk later." But they never did.
Knowing what had happened afterwards, I wish that I had pursued her and had said to her, you know, what do you mean? What's going on? Because I know Reva would have stopped me and said, okay, so what do you mean? She would have questioned it. She would have pursued it. She would have said, I can see there's something. What is it? Can I help you? But I just assumed that, you know, if something really was bothering her, she would talk to me about it. But then again, I should have known. Reva never moaned about her problems. Now, I mean, that question has played over in my head a million times since that day. Like, why did I not pursue her and ask what she meant by that? Or maybe that's just not how it was supposed to turn out. I was never supposed to hear what she had to say.
It's so difficult to get inside a relationship that isn't yours, to understand what passes between people in private. It's even harder when one of those people can no longer speak for themselves. And this is what the prosecution and the police would have to deal with after Reva's murder. They were canvassing the crime scene, interviewing potential witnesses, vetting Pistorius' version of events. But could they find out what truly happened that night between Pistorius and Reva? We'll get into that next time. From Religion of Sports and PRX, this is False Idol. False Idol is written and reported by me, Tim Rowan, and produced by Timothy Liu Lee. Kate McAuliffe is our senior producer. Our associate producer is Devin Manzi, and our production assistant is Megan Coyle. Michael Garofalo is our editor. Matt Giles fact-checked the series. And this episode was mixed by Sandra Lopez-Monsalve at PRX Productions. Gautam Chopra, Amit Sankaran, and Adam Schlossman are our executive producers. Special thanks to Annika Larson, Jessica Popovac, Joan Neeson, Ben Baskin, and Iggy Monda for their editorial support. And to composer Michael Kramer. If you like the show, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you do your listening. And if you are experiencing domestic abuse, help is out there. Call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-273-8255.
1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or visit thehotline.org. False Idol is a production of Religion of Sports and PRX.